You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good evening, everybody. This is Commander Tom Garcia. Welcome back from the holidays. And, of course, my lovely co-host, Paula Lozon, is joining me live from Boston, Massachusetts. How are you tonight, Paula?
I am doing very well, Tom. I hope you had a really good Christmas with your family. It is a cool 33 here in the greater Boston area with a wind chill of 25, and it's cold.
Oh, boy. Well, listen, I can feel your pain because we had a little cold front come through here, and it is 68 degrees down here in South Florida. I know. I've got a sweater on, and I am sitting outside on the patio because, you know, quite frankly, if somebody from Massachusetts were down here, they'd be sitting here with me in shorts and T-shirt and really enjoying it. But for me, it's chilly. But I just got back from flying all over the place, and I was in a few chilly places. One was Raleigh-Durham, North Carolina. It got a little bit chilly there. It was warm one day and then rainy and cold the next day and kind of miserable. And then, where else did I go? I had to spend a night in Bermuda. That was kind of rough duty. And then, there was some other place in the U.S. I'm supposed to be an international airline pilot, but I spend half my layovers nowadays in the U.S., and I think we were in, where was it? Gosh, gee, it's all a blur now. It wasn't like Chicago, someplace like that. So it was another cold place. It was cold two nights in a row where I was laying over. So I got to feel your pain there. And but I'll tell you what, down here in Florida, since that front went through, it was clear as a bell today. Clear as could be. Beautiful day. Beautiful day. Well, Paula, tell us why your Christmas was so good.
My Christmas was so good because I got to spend it with my family, my sister, my brother-in-law, the two kids, my son. We ended up going to my brother-in-law's parents' house, and we had an awesome, festive Portuguese meal with, just everything that you can imagine that our background puts together for a nice Christmas Eve dinner and Portuguese wine and port wine and plenty of espresso and dessert. And we didn't get to bed until 4 o'clock Sunday morning.
Wow. That's pretty good. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, I had a great Christmas because I was actually here on Christmas. And we got to spend Christmas Eve together, my wife and I, and had a nice few days leading up to that. Christmas Eve was a really nice evening. We actually stayed home. We were thinking about going out, and I did a traditional Christmas dinner. I barbecued skirt steak. Not traditional at all, but that's just what we felt like having. And then I did have to leave Saturday afternoon to go fly, but at least I had Saturday morning, and that was kind of unexpected. So it was nice that we got to have Christmas Eve and Christmas morning together. So I'm quite happy about that. But in any case, I have gotten a lot of requests from folks for some time now. It started in the beginning of December questioning about the Defense Authorization Act for 2012. In other words, the bill that is going to pay for our armed forces, and I'm all for that. The problem is we have slimy politicians that like to stick things in these bills that have nothing to do with funding and providing important equipment and training and et cetera for our troops. It has to do with something completely different. So we're going to talk about that aspect of it. And originally it was being reported as the military now under this bill has the authorization, thanks to Senator John McCain. Yes, Senator John McCain. To detain you indefinitely, just like a terrorist from another country, just like the terrorists we have in Gitmo. Well, they're not U.S. citizens. They have no rights in this country other than human rights. They don't have constitutional rights. So I don't have a problem with that. They're caught on the battlefield, shooting, and planting bombs at American soldiers. I don't have a problem with that at all. But an American citizen? Now, we've had American citizens that are terrorists. And I know the libtards would say, but Tom, we've had American citizens that are. Think about Timothy McVeigh. Yeah, the one guy that was white. Oh, yeah, not a Muslim. Oh, we got to always go back to that. But ever since then, every single terrorist we've had has been a Muslim in this country. Okay, so we're not trying to protect ourselves from bad people with this bill. What we're trying to do is stop the administration from putting terrorists that are foreigners, this is the purpose of foreigners, in federal court. This is the lame brain, dumb idea of guys like John McCain, that in order to stop Obama and his administration from trying terrorists in federal court, which we've seen how that's gone. It's gone badly. We don't want to do it. Great. But in an attempt to do that, they're sneaking in language that will allow the military to detain U.S. citizens and violate the Constitution. And I'm going to step through exactly how this happens. Okay? So it's Senate Bill 1867, the National Defense Authorization Act. And if you go through that bill, and I've been through the entire bill, and it's lengthy. We don't need bills that long. I can tell you right now, if I were in Congress, I would have just voted no. No. And here's the great thing about having more military career officers in Congress. We need them in Congress and the Senate so they can vote no for these crappy, and I mean crappy, bills. And nobody can question their patriotism. Oh, you don't support the troops. I was one of the troops for a long time, but this stuff is crap. And I'll tell you what, when I was in the Navy and when I was serving and out there on the front lines, I wouldn't have wanted a bill like this to pass, even if it meant that I was going to not have some of the money necessary to fly as much as possible and enough bombs and bullets and missiles and all that kind of stuff, because this seriously degrades our civil rights, and not only our civil rights, but our constitutional rights. So let's take a look at this bill. We've got many conservatives that are citing Section 1031 and 1032 of the bill and saying that, don't worry, it covers you, you're protected. I got to tell you, Paul, I'm flabbergasted at the number of people that I've seen letters from and heard speak about this and say, don't worry. Now, I'm going to present those two sections to you, and it is going to sound like, oh, yeah, they do. But this is legal speak. These are lawyers putting this crap together. That's why we need more military officers in Congress and the Senate, because they don't write this kind of crap, this convoluted – I keep saying the word crap, and you know, Paula, because you know me, I'd rather say another word, but that's what it is. It's a bunch of crap. So here we go. Section 1031, affirmation of authority of the armed forces of the United States to detain covered persons pursuant to the authorization for use of military force. Now, there is a law called the Authorization for Use of Military Force. That was passed after 9/11, and we're going to get to that a little bit later on. But that was passed after 9/11 to allow the president to do whatever is necessary to go after al-Qaeda members that were involved and anybody connected with al-Qaeda in 9/11 and go after them and get them. And that's what we all wanted. That's what I wanted. That's what I still want. Okay, but that's what they're referring to. That particular law, it's on the books, it exists, Congress and Senate passed it. Okay, now, under this section, it says in Section E, of 1031, authorities, nothing in this section shall be construed to affect existing laws or authorities relating to the detention of United States citizens, lawful resident aliens of the United States, or any other persons who are captured or arrested in the United States. Now, just listen to that. The last part of that says, or other persons. We talked about citizens and residents. So lawful residents, somebody with a green card, somebody who's here legally, who's gone through the process properly. Maybe they're waiting for citizenship. Maybe they're never going to apply for citizenship, but they're legally residing in the states, United States citizens and legal residents. But then it says, any other person. That could be somebody illegal in the country. That could be somebody legal but not a U.S. citizen and not a resident either. Okay, so it really covers everybody. But it leads you to believe that, and I'll read it again, nothing in this section shall be construed to affect existing law or authorities relating to the detention of United States citizens. So my first thought when I read that, Paula, was the Constitution. Great. Okay. Let's move on down to Section 1032. And in Section 1032, it's called, I got to back up here. I apologize. Okay, here we go. Requirement for military custody. That's the title, Requirement for Military Custody. And here's what it says. The requirement to detain a person in military custody under this section does not extend to the citizens of the United States. Okay, so from what I've read so far, Paul, doesn't it sound like we're covered? The military can't detain us indefinitely, and what they're talking about in these sections that have nothing to do with appropriating money to our soldiers and our military to ensure that they can do their jobs properly, safely, and securely. But in any case, this amendment via John McCain and some other liberals in the Senate does appear to protect us. Would you agree?
I would.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what it looks
now,
like. I'm reading the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. So now let me explain why it doesn't in any way whatsoever. The first section that I read in 1031 that says nothing in this section shall be construed to affect existing law. Guess what existing law exists? Just what I told you in the title of Section 1031, authorization for the use of military. Let's read the authorization of use for military. It says, and I don't know if I actually have it written here. Oh, well, what it does is it's called Public Law 107-40. You can Google it and look it up. Public Law 107. It's actually a very short and brief letter that was passed by the Congress and Senate and signed by the President, George Bush. It simply means, and I'm going to paraphrase what it means, but you can look it up. It means that the authorization for use of military force enacted after 9/11 against those involved in 9/11, that the president can utilize whatever power and authority is necessary. Okay, that sounds good. I don't have a problem with that. But here's the problem. In Section 1032, there's a waiver for this bill. So the bill is existing law. Now remember, we go back to 1031. It says, nothing in this section shall be construed to affect existing law. This is existing law. Now, in 1032, we have a waiver for national security. And here is the waiver. The Secretary of Defense can submit a letter to Congress saying, we need to waive the purpose of the national the authorization for use of military force beyond 9/11 to acts and people who are involved in plotting and carrying out acts like, and here's the key, like 9/11. That's the waiver. So the Secretary of Defense only has to submit a letter to Congress. He doesn't have to get it approved, passed by Congress. He just submits a letter, and now all of a sudden the president has the authority to use, quote, whatever means are necessary to stop any terrorist activity, whether it is related to 9/11 or not. So I'm going to read what I wrote in this email that I sent out to a bunch of people who had talked about this. The waiver of Public Law 107-40 simply means that authorization for use of military force enacted after 9/11 against those involved can be waived to include any terrorist activity. So the requirements under the War Powers Resolution remain satisfied. Remember, the War Powers Resolution says the president can only go after another country or into another country after people if Congress has declared war, Congress has authorized him to do that, or he feels that the United States of America is in imminent danger. That's it, period. So what that letter did was, for 9/11, it said, you have the authority to do this now and go after al-Qaeda terrorists. But this waiver in this defense authorization bill now says you can now go after anybody connected with anything like 9/11. So it extends Congress's approval after 9/11 to anything the president deems a threat without having to get their approval again. Honestly, this is unconstitutional. It's totally unconstitutional. It totally violates Congress's authority to declare war, and it just basically gives the president a blanket authority to declare war in the future if he deems something is similar to 9/11. Okay, so let's back up, and now let's go back to 1031, section 1031, where I said nothing in this section shall be construed to affect existing law. Well, we have existing law, and now in 1032, see how it jumps around? In 1032, a waiver to existing law that now says the president can do whatever it takes. Okay? Now, section 1032 that I read to you that says the requirement for military custody, think about that, Paula. The requirement for military custody, what is required of the military to take somebody into custody? And here's what it means. If they are foreigners, if they are a foreigner, not a U.S. citizen and not a U.S. resident, the military must take them into custody. There's the purpose of stopping this administration or any future administration of putting terrorist mass murderers in a federal court and giving them U.S. citizen rights. That's the purpose. But what it doesn't say is that it prevents the military from taking you and me into custody. It just says the military is not required to take you, Paula, and me, Tom Garcia, into custody. But it doesn't say they can't. So they can. They're just not required to. It's only foreigners that they are required to. So it doesn't protect us at all. So here's the bottom line. I'm going to read you the bottom line out of these two sections. The president gets to decide who and use all necessary force against anyone, and it can be waived to extend to acts outside of 9/11. Here's the bottom line. Number one, nothing in the bill is meant to change existing law. And we have existing law that allows the president to go after anyone, especially once the waiver has been put in place that this bill allows. Number two, the military must detain all foreigners. It is not required to detain U.S. citizens, but it can. There's your legal bullcrap speak that is spewed back and forth, and it jumps back and forth. I tell you, Paul, I had to look at it and go back and forth and back and forth for about an hour until it finally sunk in. That's exactly what this bill does. It doesn't change existing law, but thank goodness for those power-hungry politicians. We have existing law that allows the president to go after anybody connected with 9/11, and if we waive that, then they can go after anybody connected with any terrorist act. Boom. And second, the military does not have to detain you like it has to with foreign terrorists, but it can, and it can do so indefinitely. Your constitutional rights have just been violated by this bill, and if anybody tells you they haven't, they're lying to you, or they're stupid and they don't understand it. And that's why the media isn't covering this, because they're stupid. You know, I like Fox News, and they've got a bunch of lawyers that are commentators, not commentators, but, you know, newscasters. They're lawyers. Fox News hires them for a reason, because they're lawyers. And they're too stupid to understand this. I'm not a lawyer, and I completely understand it.
I think they this just tell us what we need to hear, Tom. I don't,
yes.
In my opinion, and there was something I was watching this morning, and it reaffirmed, and I can't exactly remember what it was, but it's something that, you know, you've been discussing, because you know you've always got your facts, and this individual was saying something else, and I thought that's not right, because that individual is just telling the public what they feel the public needs to hear, no more and no less, right?
Yeah. Oh, I absolutely agree. That's unfortunate, because Fox is supposed to be fair and balanced, but it's not. I'll tell you what it is. It's fair and stupid. That's what it is. It's fair and stupid. It's balanced and stupid. You know, they just go along with what's out there, and they don't dig to find out what the truth is. And they've got all these lawyers on staff, but they don't really pay attention to what's really being said and what's really being done. They just go along with what's being said. In fact, and here's case in point, and this is one thing that we're going to talk about tonight. When the Democrats and the Republicans were fighting over this payroll tax cut extension. And I'm going to tell you what it really is. It's not a payroll tax cut. We're not being taxed. For 75 years, libtards have told us, oh, no, this is your old age pension. This is your retirement. You're paying into your retirement fund. No, it's not a tax. Now suddenly it's a tax, and we're giving you a tax break. The fact is we are raiding the Social Security Trust Fund, according to what they have told us for the last 75 years. What does Fox News do? It just goes along with it. Yeah, if you don't, you know, if this bill doesn't get passed, you're not going to get $1,000, $1,000 tax cut for the next year. And this is playing right into our false choice of the day. You know, we like to do our false choice of the day, and I'm gonna get to that in a minute. But our false choice of the day has to do with this payroll tax cut. But before I get to that, what I want to do is talk about our latest our liar of the month. Our liar of the month is Senator Harry Reid, and there's a great article in Forbes written by Paul Roderick Gregory. And the title of it is Senator Harry Reid's Unicorns, Fact-Checking a Whopper. Massive lie. He did a lot of digging and work with the IRS to come up with this stuff, but basically what Harry Reid said was...
John Smith has an...
that very few people, very few millionaires actually hire anybody and, you know, employ people. Well, it turns out it's a total, absolute lie. Harry Reid is a chronic liar. He doesn't lie as much as President Obama because he's not out there talking all the time. But basically, when Harry Reid's mouth is moving, he's lying. So he basically said that, you know, there just are no, you know, there's such a finite number of millionaires that create jobs. So here's what the article has to say. He dug into the IRS tables and said that there are 236,883 tax filers with incomes of $1 million or more. Now, by Harry Reid's account, only 1% of them, 2,300, are business owners. And a tiny fraction of them actually create jobs. Okay. So if you take a tiny fraction of those, and he said, let's just use 5%. That's a fairly tiny fraction. I mean, you could go down 1% or 0.5%, but we're going to give Harry Reid a little latitude here and say 5%. To me, that's not tiny. That's just, you know, small, but okay. So 5%. That would be 118 business owners in the entire nation that earn a million or more create jobs. 118. Does that sound reasonable, Paula? 118 small business owners that earn a million or more out of 236,883 are the only ones that actually hire anybody. So does that make any sense at all?
No. No, not to me.
No, but now let's look further at the records. He says that leaves $236,765 million-plus taxpayers, most of whom, according to Harry Reid, are hedge fund managers and wealthy lawyers who don't create jobs and don't need tax breaks. He says, my Google search for Harry Reid's quarter million, we're talking, that's 236,000. That's almost a quarter of million of people. My search for Harry Reid's quarter million hedge fund managers and wealthy lawyers came up empty-handed. I could identify at most 16,000 wealthy lawyers and hedge fund managers. Now, what does the IRS have to say about this? Millionaire tax filers earn a total income of $623 billion, on which they pay the highest average tax rate, 30%. A 1.9% tax surcharge on millionaire dollar earners would yield $11 billion, assuming those shifty millionaires take no evasive action to avoid the tax. $11 billion. President Obama has just asked for another $1.5 trillion to fund the government for the rest of the year. $11 billion is nothing, not a zip, zero. It doesn't do a thing to put a dent in another $1.5 trillion. So now let's look at the numbers a little closer. Millionaire tax filers earn $220 billion, almost a quarter of a trillion, from businesses and professions, partnerships, and S-corporations. So he took that 600 and something billion and then weeded it down to who actually files as a business, profession, partnership, and S corporation. $221 billion. He says, this is puzzling. If Harry Reid's figure is correct, 2,361 millionaire businesses, remember that's what we used, his Harry Reid's own numbers, then the average millionaire-owned business earns almost $100 million. So those businesses, those millionaires that are earning $1 million, that are actually businesses, are earning $100 million, according to Harry Reid. And all of them, except 118, do all of that without hiring anyone. In other words, can you imagine, Paul, if you made $100 million last year as a business? In your business, you have an S corporation. I have an S corporation for my consulting business. Could you imagine earning $100 million? And out of that $100 million, you paid yourself $1, $2, $3 million, whatever. And the rest went to, well, I don't know. You didn't hire anybody? You didn't pay anybody anything? Wow, 118 people out of 2,361 millionaires earning $100 million a year are the only ones that hired. What a load of crap. So to summarize, millionaire tax filers earn almost $250 billion from their businesses. They must hire hundreds of thousands of employees or other consultants and businesses in order to make that $100 million apiece. These are trivial. There are a trivial number of millionaire hedge fund managers and wealthy lawyers, 16,000 out of $250,000. Okay? The millionaire tax surcharge is not aimed at them, but at the tens of thousands of millionaire business owners who actually employ people and create jobs and create wealth in this country. Harry Reid is a liar. I'm going to say it again. Harry Reid is a liar, and he's a moron. He can't find – I mean, first of all, if I were going to make a statement like that, I would ask my staff to look up the numbers. He doesn't care. He doesn't care about the numbers. He stands there and lies and lies and lies. So, in honor of the lying Harry Reid and president who likes to put out false choices, here is our false choice of the day. When we were trying to get the two-month extension to the Social Security holiday, the Social Security payroll holiday, because it's not a tax, not according to the lip cards for the last 75 years, our president told us if we don't pass this two-month extension, the average American family is going to lose $1,000 for the year. $1,000. They need that money. I found, Google it. Just Google it. President Obama, Social Security or payroll tax cut, $1,000. You will find article after article after article and video and sound bites of him saying that exactly. It goes on and on and on. Thousands of articles. The media complicit, including Fox News on this. But what really happened, Paula, with that two-month extension? The average American family is going to save $40 per month, so $80 for the two-month period. Did the president say that? He never said that once. He said $1,000 repeatedly. So the false choice, according to the president, was if we don't pass this two-month extension, you – middle-class America lose $1,000, when in fact it was $80. Now, what's going to happen is when the Senate and Congress come back from recess, oh, we got to pass an extension for the rest of the year in order to get that full $1,000. Wait a minute. You said they'd get that $1,000 just from 2 months. Oh, no, that's not what I meant. That's what you said repeatedly. So here is the false choice, the conservative false choice of the day. Paula, if we actually extend the payroll Social Security holiday and raid the Social Security Trust Fund, seniors will get $1,000 less in their next two Social Security paychecks. If we extend this holiday, our seniors across the country will find $1,000 less than they would normally get in their next two paychecks. We cannot extend it. We will be just destroying our seniors across the country. And there you go. There's your conservative false choice of the day. I can lie just as good as President Obama and Harry Reid can lie. And that is an outright lie. Seniors wouldn't see a hit at all on their Social Security checks for the next 2 months. But I could say that because if we're going to save $1,000 for Americans, well, then we're going to cut $1,000 from seniors. It doesn't work that way. But I could say that, and I could run ads all day long. And the media, would they back me up? No, they wouldn't back me up because the media doesn't care about the actual facts. They just run with what anybody says. So there's your false choice of the day. And the reality is these tax cuts, this is my fear about these so-called tax cuts, Paula. We're going to not pay into Social Security and give middle-class America a cut when, according to the president, we need it most. What's going to happen, Paula, is when you and I reach retirement age, the government's going to say, you remember all those tax holidays you got on the Social Security trust fund? Yeah, you didn't pay in your fair share. You got to keep more of your money back then. Therefore, we're not going to pay you as much in retirement. That's what's going to happen. This is a long-term problem, and this president is looking for a short-term fix to prop up his reelection. He doesn't care about you and me, Paula. He doesn't care about our kids. Because if, quite honestly, they say, no, Tom, Paula, you're going to get your retirement Social Security checks, even though for years, you didn't actually pay into it because we were trying to boost the economy and it never actually worked, you're still going to get your due money, even though you didn't pay into it. Who's going to pay for it, Paula? Your son, my daughters, that's who's going to pay for it. That's what these despicable politicians are doing to us. And it's got to stop. It's got to stop. This president has got to be defeated. My endorsement now and my efforts are to elect Rick Santorum the next few days. I am going to be working, basically making phone calls to people in Iowa and promoting Rick Santorum. He is clearly one of two, in my estimation, most conservative and non-flip-flopper. And stuck to his principles all along. Michelle Bachmann is another one. I've got a lot of friends that are supporting Michelle Bachmann. I've chosen Rick Santorum because I think he has the best, not the best chance at beating Obama. I know he can, and I know he'll be a great president. I also know that Michelle Bachmann will also. I've just chosen Rick Santorum. I like what he said on foreign policy. I like his knowledge and understanding of the Constitution, and that's why I've chosen him. The bottom line is, folks out there, you have got to get behind a candidate today. There, no more vetting. It's over. Get behind a candidate today. Even though we in Florida aren't going to be voting for another month at the end of January. And by the way, I got my absentee ballot in the mail today, and I will be mailing that off tomorrow. I know exactly who I'm voting for. Don't vacillate. Don't sit there and think about it. Get behind the right candidate today. And let's all exercise some integrity. And when I say integrity, I mean this. Vote for the right person for the right reasons, not because, well, they have the best chance of winning or I think they can beat Obama. No. Vote for the person who is the right person. If every American voted for the right person, guess what? We'd have the right person in the White House. So that's my two cents on that. And we'll talk some more next week about that, Paula. But I don't have anything else tonight. Anything, you have anything for us? Maybe you have some humor or comments.
As far as humor goes, let's see. I have. There was some that had come across. Let's see.
I know. I don't know how you do it, but you always come up with a late night gags.
Do I have? One here from the Tonight Show with Jay Leno. As they do every year, Al-Qaeda has threatened to disrupt and ruin Christmas. You know, we already have a group that disrupts and ruins Christmas every year. They're called Relatives.
That's a good one.
I would say so. From Conan, Mitt Romney's wife says her husband loves caffeine-free Diet Coke, or as it's known in the Mormon community, the ultimate gateway drug.
Yeah, if you're a Mormon, you can't have caffeine and you can't have Oh man, a lot of things. They got their word of wisdom, and I respect that. They do a fantastic job of maintaining a healthy lifestyle. So yeah, I know a lot of people that when the caffeine-free stuff came out, because Coke, all the Coke and Pepsi and Dr. Pepper for years, you know, all had caffeine in it, and you know, Mormons weren't supposed to drink that stuff. And when the caffeine-free stuff came out, it was like, yeah, we can drink all that stuff. So anyway, I don't know. You got anything else?
I do, but a lot of it has to do with the passing of the North Korea ruler. From Jay Leno's Tonight Show, North Korea announced the passing of their supreme leader, Kim Jong-il. His younger son will take over. At first, there was speculation that power could pass to one of Kim's two sisters, Courtney Jong-il or Khloe Jong-il.
Oh, boy. Well, you know, I heard on Rush Limbaugh today. Rush was not on Rush today. He had a guy filling in, and I apologize. I can't remember his name. But one of the things he said was, you know, as a Christian, should I, wish Kim Jong-il a rest in peace? So he's vacillating. I'll tell you what, as a Christian, I'll tell you this right now. No, burn in hell, Kim Jong-il. I want to pitchfork up your ass for the rest of eternity. Burn in hell. That's from a Christian. There you go. Okay. I'm not going to hold back.
Okay.
I don't know if Rush will ever have me filling for him, but I won't hold back. So anyway, yeah,
well,
Kim Jong-il can burn in hell, and he will.
No doubt. But they were all crying in the streets for him for his funeral, so I don't know.
I tell you what they did. They said, if you get out there and cry in the streets, we'll give you an extra ration of gruel. You know, we'll give you an extra couple rations of gruel for the next couple days. Get out there and cry. I mean, I watched that. I didn't see anybody that looked like they were – they all looked like they were faking it. It looked like a bad soap opera to me. That's just to me. But what do I know? Oh, you know, along the lines of threats, I do want to throw this out there. The media is just as stupid as can be. And thank goodness the Navy, yay, go Navy, announced, I guess, in the last day or so, no, Iran, you will not block Straits of Hormuz in the Persian Gulf. Listen, I was there in 86 when they tried mining the Persian Gulf and the Straits of Hormuz, and we stopped them. They tried. They pontificated. They said, we're going to do this, and they actually did attempt to do it. And what do? We went in there with minesweepers and swept out the mines and blew the holy crap out of any boat that we caught doing anything like that. And it culminated where, if you go back, you got to go back in the archives and find my interview with Ambassador Escudero, because he had the inside information. I never knew this until I met him and became friends, and he told me what actually happened. We were going to go in and blow the holy crap out of Iran, particularly Bandar Abbas, a major air base in the Persian Gulf right near the Straits of Hormuz. We were prepped and ready, and the next morning going to go, and all of a sudden it was called off. I mean, I was ready to go blow the crap out of them and shoot down anybody that came anywhere near any of us in the Navy, ships, aircraft, et cetera. We were going to have it was going to be shooting fish in a barrel. Well, it got called off, and the ambassador enlightened me as to what happened. They had an oil rig up in the Persian Gulf that they had mounted a gun on and shot at a Navy ship. And the Navy immediately blew the absolute you-know-what out of that oil rig and killed a bunch of Iranian military, et cetera. And that's when Iran said, wait. We didn't know you would actually shoot at us like that. Okay, no more. We'll stop mining the Straits and the Persian Gulf. So the bottom line is this, Paula. The Iranians say, oh, we're going to stop the traffic of oil tankers through the Straits of Hormuz out of the Persian Gulf. And I recommend people go look at the geography so you can see what that is. That the Straits of Hormuz are, I believe, maybe just a few miles wide. What we did when we were there in 86 is we would fly surveillance aircraft up through the Straits. You couldn't hover there because that would violate the airspace of the neighboring countries, including Iran. What we did was we would fly surveillance aircraft up through the Straits and then into the Persian Gulf and then turn around and fly back. And those surveillance aircraft were escorted by, guess what? Us, F-18s and F-14s. And we basically said to the Iranians, come on out. Come on out and try and tell us that we can't do this. And you know what the Iranians did? They stayed on the ground. They didn't launch any aircraft because they are cowards, absolute cowards. Unfortunately, what has this administration told them? The Iranians shoot down a drone. Well, before this president ever got elected, I'm going to negotiate directly with the Iranian terrorists. He didn't say it that way, but I'm saying it that way. But I'm going to negotiate directly with Iran. Because if we just be nice to them, then everything will be okay. He just showed a massive amount of weakness to them because they have a different culture than we do. They don't want to negotiate. They want to dominate. Except they're incompetent and they are losers. I have watched their military over the years since my early days in the Navy. They are incompetent and incapable of doing anything significant to a force like us in the United States of America. And so for them to now say, we're going to do this, means they see a weakness in us. That's precisely what it means. So I'm telling everybody today, they have no capacity or capability to do what they are saying. The Navy can crack the whip in a day and just shut them down. They are incompetent. They are incapable. They do not have naval forces that can even come close to contending with our naval forces and their air forces. They are so chicken and scared of what we have in the air, they won't even launch because that's already happened. This has already happened in 1986, and I was there, and we shut them down, and we scared them, and they ran away with their tail between their legs. That's what needs to happen. I don't know if this administration was behind this announcement. I quite honestly think that this administration is incompetent and doesn't know what to do. Thank goodness the military put out a statement and said, you're not going to do anything of the sort, period. And that is the truth. And so if anybody out there is worried, and I would say this to all the speculators on oil and markets, the price of oil has no need to go up because oil flow out of the Persian Gulf is going to be shut down. It won't. This is a repeat of history. They tried it before, and they were unsuccessful. And if they try it again, they will be unsuccessful just as quick as they were unsuccessful last time. So there's a little bit of history that you're not going to get from the media, Paula, because they're too stupid to remember that far back. And they don't dig and look for history, and they don't ask anybody that would even know about that history. But that history is there. Anybody that's old enough, like myself, that would remember, back then it was called the Tanker Wars. Iran was trying to stop tankers from coming into the Persian Gulf by laying mines. And that's what it was deemed back in 86 and 87. The Tanker Wars. So Google Tanker Wars Persian Gulf, and you'll find out exactly what happened. This is a repeat of history. This is nothing new. And yet our media outlets, they have no idea what's going on because they're stupid. So there you go. Paula, you and I, we're the media here, but we're not stupid. We know exactly what's going on. And I'm going to give you the last word tonight.
Well, I appreciate that, Tom, and going with my last word, like I typically do, I came across an article in a magazine while I was away this weekend, and it's called Honoring the Fallen. The wars in Afghanistan and Iraq claimed the lives of more than 450 Americans this year alone, bringing the U.S. death toll to more than 6,300 individuals since 2001. There was an article, and what I would like to do in the next upcoming weeks is, you know, read a handful of names and ages of these individuals that have served our country across the pond and giving of themselves and you know, sacrificing what they did for their countrymen and the loved ones that they had to leave behind, their families and their friends, all for the sake of this quote-unquote cause, as I would call it. One individual that struck my eye was, I know I'm going to butcher his last name, so forgive me. His name is Sergeant First Class Christopher Domage, 29 years old. He did 14 tours of duty in his young 29 years old.
Wow.
As the war in Afghanistan enters its 11th year, the magazine pays tribute to soldiers killed in Kandahar province, one of the deadliest regions of the country. More than 80 soldiers have died in the province this year alone, including Sergeant First Class Christopher Domage, 29, an elite Army Ranger who was killed by a roadside bomb October 22nd during his 14th deployment to Iraq and Afghanistan. The former high school football star, honored with 3 Bronze Stars for his bravery, 1 admiration from peers for his quiet confidence and charisma, a dedicated father to his 2 children, a 3-year-old and a 17-month-old, he told friends this deployment would be his last. His friend, Master Sergeant Stephen Stalker, said that he wanted to be around for the birthdays. He never got the chance, but his loved ones find solace knowing he died for a cause that he believed in. His widow said he was born to do what he did. I'll start with 5 names this evening. Omar Asavs, 30. Rudy Alexander Acosta, 19. Danielle Ronald Adams, 35. Frank Edward Adamski, the 3rd, 26. And Charles Lewis Atkins, 36. Now, the reason that I want to do this is because I want our listeners and anyone else out there, I want people to remember the people that have fought for the country and that have died for the country. And it'll take me probably a couple of weeks to do this because there are a lot of names on these pages and I don't want them ever to be forgotten. And so with that being said, the last of the soldiers had come home, I believe it was last week for the holiday. So what I'm asking is, you know, as someone who lives here in this country, is that you continue to keep in your thoughts and in your prayers the soldiers that are still fighting for this issue in Afghanistan and, you know, God forbid any place else that might come up in the next coming months. I mean, 11 years is a really long time, and your families love you, and they miss you, and we support you, and we thank you for fighting for our, you know, our freedoms and our liberties. And if you don't get to come home for the New Year's, we're thinking of you, and we love you dearly, and Happy New Year to you. Even though you're there, if you're not here, you are in our hearts and in our prayers.
Wow. That's fantastic. That's going to be a great. We're going to absolutely have to do that in future segments. Great idea. I love it. And I just want to say that you mentioned Bronze Star. I want to just mention Joan Flowers and her father, who fought in World War II and was a true hero, buried in an unmarked grave in Chicago. We are still fighting and working and looking for ways to get him moved to Arlington. And this is the kind of thing we don't want to ever happen to any future soldiers. And also, I told you I'd give you the last word, but I have to just say this. A shout out to Joan Flowers, and we are going to continue to press forward with this and do what we can. And her father, Theodore Lovejoy. Google Theodore Lovejoy. You'll find him on the internet. He was a war hero, and we found out that he was an ammunition handler and fought in Normandy and France and Italy and other parts of European theater there, was an absolute war hero, and we've got to do something about this, not only for him, but for all of the war heroes. Today and the past, we cannot forget these people, and I think this is a great idea to remember folks. And we'll get Joan on here one day. Maybe we'll do when Memorial Day comes up next time around and Veterans Day, and talk about some of these great heroes, not only from the present, but the past. And the final thing I would say, Paula, is it just jogged my memory about something. When I was getting ready to leave Raleigh-Durham, North Carolina, yesterday to fly down to Miami and then up to Bermuda, there was a midshipman, a plebe. I knew do it as a plebe because I wore that uniform when I was a plebe. You got no stripes, nothing. You got anchors on your collars. And he looked really young. And I went over and sat down next to him, and I thanked him for choosing a career in the military and gave him a little advice on, you know, how to make it through that place and how to get ahead in the Navy and serve our country valiantly, as well as the main advice I gave him was, even if you decide it's not for you after you've served your time, stay in the reserves. Stay in the reserves. And I would say that to anybody out there. If you've served in the military and you decide, you know what, it's time to move on and do something else, stay in the reserves. You'll never regret it. And I'm sure there are a few people that have, but I never regretted it. And I have too many friends that have never regretted it. And but it was nice seeing this young man. Class of 2015. And, you know, in 2013, it's my 30-year reunion. I'm feeling really, really old. But it was nice seeing a young man like that, so enthusiastic and ready to go serve his country and become a career military officer. We've got so many great young people in this country that, as you just read the names, who have served valiantly, and they are absolute heroes. Absolute heroes. It doesn't matter what the purpose of that war was. It doesn't matter whether it was right or wrong to go into those countries. They went and did not question and did their jobs and served. And, my gosh, we owe them such a debt of gratitude from today all the way back to the Revolutionary War, and we've got to honor our war heroes. So, Paula, thank you so much, and I really look forward to these future episodes of honoring our fallen heroes and our war heroes. And so now I am going to give you the final last word. I had to jump in there, but give us one last word, because I know you always do, about the military. One last word.
I do. You know, shout out goes out to the military overseas, specifically the Navy. I know that my godson's father is home this year. They're in Groton, Connecticut. That's where he's stationed right now. And I get to go down there and see them tomorrow for my godson's first birthday party. I'm excited. Navy, your families love and miss you dearly. And if you're out, you know, doing what you're doing and protecting our waters, your families love and miss you dearly and are looking forward to having you home real soon.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Paula. All right, we'll be back next week. I honestly don't remember off the top of my head what the schedule is, but it's probably going to be Wednesday and Thursday like we've done this month. I think I send out information to you and some of the other folks that help out with the show. Wednesdays and Thursdays next month. Join us on the American Hour. Thank you for joining us tonight. We love you. God bless. And
Happy New Year.
God bless you. Yes, and Happy New Year.
You're listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.